on the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios high atop Chicagoland as we are looking down on what is a picture-perfect postcard awesome day. Maybe a little bit warm, I guess, maybe out in the suburbs. Maybe David Jennings can do something about that as far as the weather here in the city. It is absolutely awesome. One of those days that you're going to cherish and enjoy. Hopefully everybody's getting out and about. Of course, their radio's tuned to WGN as we are going to have a fun, eclectic show. We're going to talk a little bit of cars. It's the season, you know, all the cruise nights, car shows, so many big ones happening. We've been featuring quite a few of them, and none bigger or better, I think, than the one coming up down near Chicagoland Speedway and Route 66. It's the DeArcy Buick GMC Route 66 Classic, returns to all its glory in 2018. This is the second one that they had, and it has gotten, we talked a little bit about it, it's going to have a little bit of everything, and we'll have some of those guests on with us today. We're going to have Jay Jahiniak. He's going to be on in just a couple minutes with us. So throughout the rest of the program, we are going to have Tanya Marie. She was the Miss Classic. Yes, there's a pinup contest, a lot of kind of homages to classic car culture and enthusiasm for that, and she'll be joining us a little bit later on in the program as well. I think we're going to be able to get Monster Energy Cup Series driver Eric Jones on with us, talk a little bit about Michigan, his hometown, some of those road trips and his formative time, as he is now really one of those hot drivers in that series. He's had lots of success everywhere he's went, but now he is up in the Premier Series for stock cars, and he's doing great. So Eric Jones, hope to have him on for that. And then we are going to ride the Riverboat Twilight. We've talked about it. John Williams talks about it. Even Scott talked about, you know, how he would love, you know, he's always in that fast-paced business tech world, and so to be able to sit back for a couple days and just relax on the deck of a riverboat as you kind of just float down the mighty Mississippi, seeing all sorts of wildlife. We're going to talk with Captain Kevin from the Pilot House. That's what they call it, I guess. It's not, I'm not up on all the super pirate lingo, and he's not a pirate, right? But it's, but I'm sure a lot of the, you know, I'm sure a lot of the terms are the same. So he'll be joining us a little bit later. Then got a chance to check out so much of what St. Petersburg has to offer. I would definitely recommend it if you're going to get in the car or go down and visit. This is a town on the verge of lots of great things, and it really is, at least for me, a place that didn't have really a firm definition. You know, you think of it as just a place, Tampa, St. Pete, a place next to it. You knew that there's a beach and it's in Florida, but it really didn't have an identity. I think that's going to change, where it's going to be known as not only all of those cool kind of, you know, sun and surf and sand things, but also a great art culture, a great food culture, and craft beer is blowing up. We'll talk with Chris Johnson from Green Bench later on in the program as well. Right now, though, without further ado, the big thing is happening down there at the Route 66 complex. It is the classic DeArcy Buick GMC Route 66 Classic. And on the line with us is a guy that is going to be front and center. It is Jay Jahiniak. Jay, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. Thanks for having me on.
First, Jay, and it's been a mystery because Ashley, our producer, and of course myself, like, how do you pronounce, so that we can do it right for the, how do you pronounce your name? It's an interesting, how do you pronounce it?
Jahiniak. Yeah, I could have been a Smith or a Jones, but no, I had to be a Jahiniak. So,
all right, so we sort of got it there. All right, so Jay Jahiniak. Now, here's the story too, and I love this. And we feature a lot of people who are doing really great work on the custom car side, or remodeling, refurbishing some of those beloved cars from the past. You had a car, you know, the 1970 Chevelle Super Sport. That has been our bona fide ride of the show a couple times. People always have a love affair with the Chevelle, but your path to having that car, being out there, being at a great show like this has been really a challenging one, really one that I don't know that you would, you know, put it down as something that you would like to do, but you certainly have overcome so many different things. Give the listeners, you know, a couple minutes, a little thumbnail on your journey from getting into that, you know, into the business of restoring cars to where you are today.
Well, it's kind of ironic that this weekend falls the 28th anniversary of when I was hurt. I went quickly to Mexico for a trip. I lived in San Diego and fell asleep in the back of a pickup truck at about midnight, and we were coming back home to San Diego. And driver fell asleep, drove off a 40-foot embankment at 70 miles an hour, and instant paraplegic. So, but I came back south then and was trying to get acclimated to being in a chair, getting on with life, and always wanted a 70 Chevelle. looked around, and finally found a candidate at a little car show in town and said that was my dream car. I've had tons of other years, 66, 67, 69 Chevelles, but the 70 was the iconic year that I wanted. So found this one, took it all apart, had it all redone. It was dark green with black stripes then, and put it together. And my first show, I believe, was the Street Machine Nationals here in town. And I was really surprised at how well the car was received. You know, I didn't really gauge my work against anybody else's. And it was really a eye-opening time for me. And then showed the car, drove it for up until, I think it was 2007. I took apart a totally perfect car again, down to nothing, and set out to build my dream car. You know, I had it in my head. It was going to be silver with black stripes,
yeah.
A really big block, and we started that, and right in the middle of the build, I contacted a bone disease in my right hip. That sidelined everything. It was supposed to be like a two-year build max. It turned into 10 years. I had surgery in 2011. The surgery went horribly wrong. I had every infection under the sun, VRE, the superbug, Proteus, staph.
Wow.
They wanted to amputate my leg so many times. I had a total of eight surgeries in 3 years. My sixth one was October 16th, 2014. I actually had a 7-minute code blue, which my heart and respiratory system stopped, but luckily they were right on me and brought me back.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I mean, okay, you think about this, and there are a lot of people that have a car that they want to have, and there's a couple ways to go ahead and get it. You can just get, at least at this point, for some of those classic muscle cars, you can get really wealthy and then just buy one, or you can go ahead and get into that process. So it's exciting to hear just how much, you know, experience that you didn't have when you got into it, and then also just insurmountable odds. I mean, overcoming a lot of the health stuff to do it. And there are so many people that are hearing this right now that get sidetracked just by life, right? You know, they're halfway through a build and they never end up finishing. So exciting to hear that you were able to get it done. We've got some pictures of it that you texted me of the silver and black Chevelle. It is awesome. We'll put them up at WGNradio.com. And I know that you're going to be out at the Classic as well. So before we let you go, and I know we're going to have you on in the near future again to go through kind of more in-depth on the story and what you're doing, but for the event coming up next weekend, what are you going to be doing there, and people can get a chance to see you in person?
I'm just really excited, Dan, about, you know, representing the show. They asked me to be on the red carpet, which is a great honor for me. You know, just the car was only finished last year, and I was really, really taken back by how well this one has been received. But we'll be out on the red carpet all day, which is they pick out 10 cars out of the whole show to be feature cars. And anybody is welcome to come out if they want to know how to work hand controls or how I went about building or driving or, you know, any questions at all. I'd be more than happy to answer. But just really, really excited and really honored to be asked to represent the show.
Yeah,
it's
going to be great. We're going to
be a great time.
Yep, able to see you out there as well. And is there any, before we go to break in a second or so, is there any, like, social media? Do you have any ways people can keep up with your adventure, stay in contact with you, and then kind of, I guess, connect with you right before they get to see you in person next week? Got any Facebook or Twitter or anything like that?
I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but basically I've been in the garage working on this thing so much I haven't really been on social media all that often, but if they want to come out or reach through the radio station or something like that, I'm sure you can get something connected.
All right.
But if they need to talk, you know, I'm more than willing.
Yeah, okay, so it's going to be next week. It is next Saturday. It is the Darcy Buick GMC Route 66 Classic, and you're going to get to see Jay Jehiniak out there and the amazing car that he has been working on. Really, your life's work, right? And one of those main cars that they're featuring at the show. So, Jay, thanks so much for what you're doing. I know a lot of people have been pulling for you to get to this point and be able to show it off. It's going to be exciting to kind of have everybody be out there and joining you next week. So thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you, Dane. Appreciate it.
All right. So this is there's a lot of stories like that and so many great cars, top 10 cars out there. There's going to be hundreds and hundreds of them. So when we come back from this break, we are going to have another big part of that show is going to be on with us is Miss Classic Tanya Marie. She is the Miss Classic pinup contest winner from last year. And there'll be another contest. Who knows if she'll defend her title. We'll have more of that when we come back. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Hey, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the number 4 Jimmy John's Ford Fusion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Skyline studio high atop Chicago. And coming up, we talked a little bit about the big Darcy Buick GMC Route 66 Classic. Returning, it is a car show, it is a swap meet, it is a display, there are a lot of interactive demos. I think there's going to be some racing going on. There certainly is going to be the pinup contest. And on the line with us, we're honored to have, you know, it's not always Ashley that we have the royalty on with the show. And, we have, Tanya Marie. She is Miss Classic, the defending one. Tanya, welcome to WGN.
Hi, thank you for having me, Dane.
Well, thanks for taking time out. You know, I'm sure you have a busy schedule with all of the, you know, and of course, the scepter and all the other things that go along, maybe a sash, right, go along with,
yes.
with the contest. But first off, let the listeners know, having been a part of what it was last year, talk about it. I'm sure you've been, as someone that's worked in and around, you know, the motorsports and cars, right, in the car business for a long time, you've been to a lot of cruise nights and car shows. Talk about how different this is down there at Route 66.
Yes, the Darcy Classic is bar none a car show that is stands on its own. It's so unique. They have the classic cruising, the tiki bar, drag racing with pro stock, super stock, live entertainment, grudge matches, throwback rub. They have vendors that come in that you can come and, you know, you can buy things from, you know, beauty products, clothing. So it's really an event for the entire family.
They've got a lot of, I think, either antiques or memorabilia from kind of all through the decades and the eras for motorsports enthusiasts. And I know talking with Scott Paddock a number of times and Sarah from the Speedway, too, that has been, you know, sort of a focus. It isn't necessarily just, hey, let's just throw out all this car stuff, right? There is a real dedication to highlighting some of those cars and even kind of that motorsports culture through history.
Yes, absolutely.
And so when it comes to the pinup contest, describe a little bit about that. I mean, we've all seen on television beauty contests, and I'm sure some of that, you know, comes into play. And to let the listeners know, you know, you're a very attractive lady, you know, Tanya Marie, so that you got that. But there's other things about it, too, right? You have to, as far as you have to have sort of like the retro, I don't want to say costumes, but garb, right?
Yes.
Talk about it.
It's the vintage-inspired fashions that these women bring out, and some of them, it's so amazing the time and effort that they put into their outfits, and, you know, just to pull off the pinup look, it's almost sort of a, you know, a persona that you take on before you go on stage, and, you know, the part of the pinup contest is just having questions and answers based on asking these ladies questions based on that era, and, you know, that was part of the contest is asking them, you know, how they feel that they can relate to the era, and then just looking at their fashion and what they have to bring to the table as a pageant.
So a little bit of background on you before we let you go and go to break. You know, you'll be there kind of helping work some of the events next Saturday as well, but your background on the car side.
Yes, I am. I will be a judge, actually. I'll be passing the torch, and it's going to be awesome to be on the other side and see these beautiful ladies up there answering questions and being able to crown the next.
And of course, there's a good cause. Is it Pits for Patriots? And the
There's the Queen of Hearts. Pits for Patriots is a non-for-profit that we were trying to raise money for. It's a charity. They rescue and train pit bulls as service dogs for veterans. So nice. These ladies will be raising money. That's part of what they're going to be doing as the pageant and trying to raise as much money as we can for this non-for-profit organization.
Oh, that sounds great. And I'm excited to encourage everybody, ChicagolandSpeedway.com, Route66Raceway.com. I'm sure you can get more information and tickets and all of the kind of different ways that you can participate in it. It seems like there is so much for you as you're going to be passing the torch, but if people want to, you know, follow all the stuff that you do and kind of keep up with your adventures, do you have a way that people can do that? Maybe like Facebook?
Yes. Twitter?
Go ahead.
Yes, I do. On Instagram, it's Tanya Marie Pinup, and I have a Facebook page as well, which is Tanya Marie Pinup, and you can follow me through my events and photo shoots and all the fun things.
Tanya Marie, she is the current reigning Miss Classic, so continued success, and we'll see you next week as you help crown the next one.
Yes, thank you so much, Dane.
All right, thanks, Tanya. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll send it to news. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Captain Kevin from the Riverboat Twilight, and we're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Take it easy. 720 WGN, on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high atop Chicagoland, and we can see pretty far. We can't see all the way out to the Mississippi River or out to the border between Iowa and Illinois, but you can see it and should make that trip, a family road trip, get everybody into the car and head west. And you're thinking to yourself, well, where are you going to go? It's a road trip. But hey, you get an opportunity to get on a great riverboat and enjoy the amazing experience that the Riverboat Twilight is. And on the line with us to share all of the things that he does and that you will see is the one and only Captain Kevin Steyer. Kevin, welcome to WGN.
Well, thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you on, and I know that your schedule, especially in the summer, is jam-packed. You are up and down the river taking people on basically what is an amazing and unforgettable trip all the time. So for you to be able to pull away to get on the phone with us here and talk to the listeners at WGN, I think is great. So we appreciate it. So Kevin, a day in the life, like what is your normal week like these days?
It's pretty packed. Every day we travel 83 miles on the Mississippi River from LeClaire, Iowa, where Interstate 80 crosses, all the way up to Dubuque. And we stay overnight in Dubuque. And today we're heading back downriver with a group of passengers. And our entire trip is actually within a national wildlife refuge that was set out in the 1920s by Congress. So in a day's time, you'll pass 600 islands. I mean, we go through a 40-mile stretch where you don't see a single house.
Oh,
so if you want to get out of nature and you want to relax, this is the trip to do it. Very relaxing trip. The food is plentiful on the boat, too. We serve actually 5 meals a day on the boat. So you get breakfast, mid-morning snack, lunch, afternoon snack, and dinner. So you don't go away hungry, for sure.
Do you have passengers that are saying, like, hey, you know what, I'm still full from the last meal that I had. Maybe I'll just hold on to this one, where they're kind of stowing their food away?
We have to-go boxes. Actually, we order in a case of to-go boxes just because people take some of their meals with them because they can't eat it all.
Yeah. Well, and part of it is it's not only just, you know, the opportunity to have maybe as much food or maybe a little more than maybe you even want, but also there's so much to see, too. You mentioned all the different wildlife that you see along that route. The fact that there isn't a house to be seen, I think, is pretty amazing. It's on that wildlife reserve. And so some of the wildlife that you see, like, describe a little bit about some of the things that you'll come in contact with. I mean, so it isn't all aquatic life. You see a lot of stuff in the air and on the land as well.
Correct. So in this trip today, we'll see roughly over 2,000 pelicans, a North American pelican, wow. One of the largest flying birds in North America, and they were thought to be extinct, but we have the pelicans back here starting around 1990, and there's several thousand of them we'll see today. We passed 42 bald eagles' nests.
Oh.
The young eagles have already left their nest, but we'll see them back and around the nest every once in a while on some of the nests. One of the nests is actually 3,000 pounds. It's been there for 22 years. So, and an average day up here, we'll see anywhere from 20 to 60 bald eagles a day.
Oh, my God.
We saw, I think, 47 bald eagles yesterday, catching fish and out hunting on the river. It's just spectacular. And yesterday, an eagle came down and caught a fish right in front of the boat.
No!
About half the passengers were sitting on front of the boat actually saw it come down and grab it straight up out of the water and take it up into a tree and eat it.
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, that is worth the price of admission alone. I mean, to see a bald eagle in person is something you just don't see. I've been on the planet a while, you know, so far, and been out in the woods a certain amount of the time. And I have only just recently seen my first one, you know, seen them. In the wild out there. So to see so many in action and get close proximity, one of the things that I thought was interesting, and you mentioned it, there's a 3,000-pound nest, is that their nests are absolutely huge, right? It's way bigger than you'd think.
Their nests get so big. So the eagles mate for life, and that's anywhere from 25 to 35 years out here, and they continually add sticks to the nest year after year. So the eagle, sometimes the nests get so big they tip the tree over, but this one nest is 15 feet tall. And well over 20 years of adding sticks to the nest. It's amazing.
It's the kind of thing, I don't know, we can say it, right? You can share it. Obviously, you're an authority on it. I know, having seen some of these nests, that they're really, really big. But I don't think there's a substitute for actually seeing stuff like that in person. And to see the eagle hunting and actually pulling a fish out of the water is something that, well, you mentioned you saw like 40 of them in one time. So you're almost kind of guaranteed to see a certain amount of amazing things on the trip.
Oh, yeah, you definitely are. I mean, we see eagles every day. Like yesterday, we had a little bit of a drizzly rain for part of the trip, and everybody's like, oh, it's raining. But the mist and the fog coming off the hills and the eagles catching fish, and then you got to see eagles drying their wings, you know, after the rain. It's just stuff that you don't normally get to see out here on the river. And we go through two locks and dams that were built by the Corps of Engineers back during the WPA project in the 1930s. And just the experience of going through a lock and dam here on the Mississippi is amazing. And the towboats that are out here, I mean, each towboat is pushing enough cargo to equal 36 miles worth of semi-truck in the end of the amount of cargo that they're pushing. A towboat out here pushing 15 barges is equal in length to an aircraft carrier.
Wow.
So you're seeing boats out here on an hourly basis that are as big as aircraft carriers, 1,200 feet long.
Here's another thing, too, is we talked about the kind of the unexpected size of the eagle's nest. But and of course, we cross over rivers on a daily basis all the time, you know, wherever we're driving. But I don't know that there's a substitute for seeing the Mississippi, the mighty Mississippi in person, and to be able to have that opportunity to see it, because it is really quite a bit different, quite a bit bigger than anything you'd normally run into.
It really is. I mean, the river itself on a daily basis is flowing about 1 million gallons of water a second. And what you see going across in a car is just a small snippet of what's actually out here on the river. It's amazing. People come and ride the boat, and the trip is so relaxing. You can sit down on the main deck in a teak rocking chair or a lounge chair and just watch there and listen to the river go by. And you just disconnect with, you know, the rest of the world, and you're just out here the way that Mark Twain would have been doing it 150 years ago. It's kind of a really neat experience, and we pride ourselves on giving that unique experience of the river. And if you want, you're welcome to come up here in the pilot house. We can tour the pilot house on the Twilight and talk to me and just love to meet people.
Yeah, so let the listeners know we're talking with Captain Kevin Steyer for the Riverboat Twilight. This is one of those situations that isn't just what you do. This is who you are, right? The passion to be involved with and creating these memories and experiences for people. And so bless you for doing that. And let's talk a little bit about, it's always one, you know, great point A to point B. People think of travel oftentimes is just getting to wherever it is they're going. But this experience, Riverboat Twilight, is all about the journey, right? And so talk about the boat. This is one of those unique riverboat experiences you just don't have all the time. And it's a great place to just spend the time from point A to point B.
Yeah, the boat is set up. We don't ever take over about 130 people on the boat, even though we can hold way more than that. So it's a unique, small experience. And the boat is big enough that we could accommodate several hundred people if need be. But we take small groups of people, and we give them 166 miles of the Mississippi River over a two-day time period that you really come away with an appreciation of what the river is out here. And it's just a fascinating, relaxing experience. You understand the commerce that happens on the river, and you understand basically the beauty of what's going on out here on the river.
Yep.
And all the wildlife.
So describe the experience. You get there, you get on the boat, you take the trip, you see all those amazing things, enjoy the food and all that, and then you've got an overnight stay with some fun things to experience as well.
Correct. We get on the boat in the morning. We serve everything that's served on the Twilight is made fresh in the galley at the time that it's served to you. So you get breakfast, mid-morning snack. We go through a lock and dam. You get lunch, entertainment in the afternoon, an afternoon snack, and dinner. And just after dinner, we land in Dubuque. Dubuque was a city that was founded around 1800, a very old historic city. And we tour you around the next morning, going through the National Mississippi River Museum. And it's just a fascinating museum. You tour around different spots in Dubuque. It's an overnight stay in Dubuque, also at the Grand Harbor Hotel and Resort. We park the boat right next to it. So basically you get a tour of Dubuque the second day up until about noon. You get on the boat and we serve you lunch, go back down through two locks and dams, afternoon snack and dinner, and we're back in LeClaire usually between 6 and 6:30 of an evening. So it's a two-day round trip from LeClaire, Iowa, up to Dubuque, overnight, and then back.
Yeah, it's all immersive, too. You get to kind of experience, let yourself go, let yourself kind of get in and be one with nature, and then see a lot of those areas, and especially that museum, too. I think you come away from it not only kind of rested, relaxed, but also kind of educated, right? There's a lot to learn.
It is. It's. I've had people ride the boat for the 2 days, and they just had no idea that there was this much out here. And the stories that I tell are not stories that I've looked up in the book. You can't do it. It's from people that live here or live there or work there or did this or did that, or their families or their great grandfathers did this on the river, and they've relayed those stories to me. So the stories that I narrate on the boat or I tell on the boat, they're not the same every trip. It's basically what knowledge people have implied to me over the last 37 years that I've been doing this. It's not anything that's actually written anywhere.
It is one of those unique experience, kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and we're proud to share it here on WGN and encourage people to get out there and see it. It is just a short road trip away and then a day or so of relaxing and experiencing things in a way that you have, and I tell you right now, that you have not done before. Regardless, you've been to the woods and the national parks and all that kind of stuff. To be kind of immersed in a situation like this on this great riverboat is something truly special. And if you don't have all that time, there are other ways that you can experience kind of shorter trips, right? You do have like either day trips or one day or afternoon. There's other ways to experience Riverboat Twilight.
We do. We have sightseeing trips on Saturdays out of LeClaire, Iowa. They do sell out fast, as well as we have one day trips that leave out of Dubuque up to Guttenberg, Iowa. So it departs from Dubuque up to Guttenberg, Iowa, an old historic German village, and back all in the same day. We do those over Labor Day weekend and at the end of October. And I have to caution you that our trips are selling out quickly. So if you'd like to ride with us at some point throughout the rest of the year, all the way to the end of October, please book early, because quite a few of them are already sold out. And the fall leaf color up here is absolutely fabulous. Yeah. So those Guttenberg trips and the fall two-day trips, a lot of hardwood trees all the way up and down the Mississippi. So they're absolutely beautiful if you catch it at the right time for the fall leaf color.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine in the fall it would be amazing. Got to be great in the summertime, too, seeing a lot of stuff and enjoying some of that weather. And then the fall colors, you didn't want to miss those along the Mississippi as well. So before we let you go, Kevin, let us know the website where people can get on there, kind of pick that weekend out or that trip that they specifically want to go, make their reservations, come sail with you.
And you can go to www.riverboattwilight.com, or our phone number is 800-331-1467.
Captain Kevin Steyer, he is out there on, I don't want to say the high seas, right? But he's out there traveling and sailing and leading the way for an experience at a second to none Riverboat Twilight. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for what you're doing. Be safe out there and enjoy all those eagles. And thanks for jumping on WGN today.
All right. Thanks for having me on, and come take a boat ride sometime.
Hi, everyone. This is NASCAR driver Kenny Wallace and Fox Sports analyst. You are on the road with Dane and WGN.
WGN 720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high atop Chicagoland, 303 East Wacker, and so many great people out enjoying their weekend, enjoying the cars out on the road, and also enjoying some cool stuff that is happening and coming up. Our next guest that we're going to have on in just a second
is a guy that has been on the show before. If you listen to the bumper that we had, that was Kenny Wallace, and Kenny Wallace is, you know, one of those kind of beloved personalities. He is a Cardinals fan, so of course people kind of take umbrage with that. But also, too, is he's you know, a big NASCAR personality and a beloved personality on the car racing side, and a guy who shares sort of lineage and maybe a little bit of history on the hometown side with him is on the line with us. One of our favorite chefs in the Chicagoland area, with some exciting stuff coming up, is the one and only Chef Tim Graham. Tim, welcome to WGN.
Hey, how you doing?
So these are, you want to say these are exciting times, and for the listeners to let them know, this is a guy who has been in and around Chicago on the culinary scene for a number of years. He has been one of the acclaimed chefs over at True on the fine dining side. He is a Cushon 555 champion and competed in Grand Cushon as well, and just an all-around good guy. Regardless of his baseball affiliations, he does... He enjoys, you know, when the Cubs do well, and I think that we'll get down to the wire on that. But so, Tim, these are exciting times, right? Your restaurant, Twain, is just around the corner.
Super exciting, Dane, and thanks for having me here, even with my affiliations. And we're cooking for the second day in our kitchen today, so super fun.
You know, talk a little bit, and we talked about it maybe, I don't know, maybe a year ago, 6-8 months, the process, because I know, especially somebody who's done things at the level that you have, and of course your wife is in on every bit of this as well, you want it to be perfect. Has it been one of those like typical Chicago kind of bumpy rides, or as you're trying to kind of fine-tune things to make it just right?
Yeah, it was. It's been longer than either of us or our partner Bronco could have anticipated, I think, but you know, we feel like we found the right spot, where we found the right designer, we've got the great team everywhere, and it just took, I think, just longer than we had ever thought it would. Really, it's been almost 2 years.
So I think is it Logan Square, right, where it's going to be?
Yep, Logan Square, 2445 North Milwaukee.
All right. Now, it cannot, I mean, that is one of the hottest areas. It is a great place to be in location. I think people would travel wherever you'd be, Tim Graham, to come and find your food. But I think you're in one of those great areas. Describe for the listeners kind of the thought process, kind of the mindset of Twain on the food side.
So I have probably close to 300 spiral-bound Women's League cookbooks from the 30s to now, Cherry Church, Baptist Church, those types of books that have always been sold for fundraising efforts, and just really drawn a lot of inspiration from there. I'm from Central Missouri, hence the name of the restaurant, and we have just tons of references to that type of Midwestern culture and type of grandma's feeling and that warm, welcome hospitality. Food-wise, you know, chicken and dumplings, our surf and turf's going to have meatloaf. We're doing a play on Ants on a Log. We've got a special table that we built in the dining room to do hand-churned ice cream. So just a whole bunch of family traditions that I'm so excited to show Chicago and Logan Square.
Oh, it sounds like it is going to be great, and you cannot go wrong with those cookbooks. That is a really cool idea to build. Of course, you've got your own vision on the culinary side, and you'll be building that into it too, but you can't go wrong with those. There is some really awesome stuff built into those cookbooks.
Oh, yeah, it's... there's so many ideas. I mean, I can't wait to keep combing through those over the years and finding new and new things like calico salad or Watergate salad or Watergate cake. You know, all of these things are named with a story. The person that submitted them to the book puts their name on it, so you know it's their best recipe if they're going to put their name on it.
Yep.
And just so many treasures to be found inside these books.
Exciting too, the fact that you can, and you've been a part of some great restaurants, obviously, and some from the ground up builds as well, but to be doing this with your wife too, and she's a pro on the beverage side. I mean, this has got to be really cool.
It is so amazing to work with her and see her be good at what she does. And, you know, even just find 2 minutes during the day to go say, hey, what you doing? Her cocktails are shaping up pretty just ridiculous. We've got one coming out in this jelly jar that's got marmalade and stuff in it. That's right on point. The wine list, it's great to watch her build. It's just, it really has been amazing to do it from scratch. Like, this was an old auto body shop, so we took the cement out of here, underground plumbing, put the new flooring down, and it's really remarkable.
Yeah, I know. As excited as you guys are, I know that so many people, including myself here in Chicago, Chicagoland, the greater Midwest, are excited as well. So last thing, give the location, maybe the website, and then the days, right, when people will be able to start stopping by.
Absolutely. So the website's www.twainchicago.com, and we are open for business officially on the 21st of this month. We got a big ribbon cutting with the aldermen and state reps on the 16th, so we're in the home stretch, Dane.
Oh, it's exciting stuff. All right, I'm going to let you get back to it. I know there's so many final details to work on, and encourage everybody to get out there and see Twain when they can, and get to that website. Chef Tim Graham, thanks so much for jumping on the show today.
Thank you, sir. Can't wait to see you.
All right, we'll see you soon. All right, right now we're going to take a break. We'll come back. Then we are going to we're going to send it to news. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
This is Chris Johnson from Green Bench Brewing Company, and you're on the road with Dane from WGN.
WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high atop Chicagoland. And as we, throughout the course of the summer, kind of ramp up our on-the-road road trips, you know, transformative travel, get out there with the family, get out there and see some of America, some of the great stuff, some of the sights, the sounds, the flavors, right? And enjoy some of the artisan accoutrements of what is an unbecoming and vibrant community. And this week, of course, we went to St. Petersburg and got a chance to ride around. Everybody who knows and listens to the program knows that we're good friends with Dr. Barbecue himself, Ray Lampe, who, regardless of his presence and prominence in St. Petersburg, still, you know, we claim him as our own, as an honorary Chicagoan for a long time. And he took me around the city there about some of the great things that are happening on the culinary scene. It is a great art scene. There are so many cool things happening in St. Petersburg, not the least of which is the craft brew scene, which is, I don't want to say exploding, but 40 craft breweries in a market of that size, with more to come. And you know, somebody is out there enjoying some of the beer, and one of the more prominent ones that everyone is excited about is Green Bench Brewing. And on the line with us is the owner and head brewer, Chris Johnson. Chris, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
So we've heard a lot about Green Bench Brewing, and here's one of the things. I think it's one of the coolest things that you can have as far as a business card. You know, maybe, you know, fighter pilot, maybe race car driver, but to be like a brewmaster, to be a craft brewer, I think is one of the coolest things that you can do. And you are doing it down there in a place that is getting a lot of attention now at Green Bench.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely hard to covet other jobs because it is a really fun gig. And just real quick, St. Pete's definitely blowing up in the craft beer scene. But I will say this, that, you know, Ray claims you guys about probably twice as much as you claim him. So he's very, very proud Chicagoan.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Well, here's the thing, too. You know, the craft brew scene, and I've had an opportunity, you know, Steve Hindy with Brooklyn Brewing, you know, Jim Cook, you know, with Samuel Adams, and, you know, we've got Goose Island here, you know, with Greg Hall and all of those guys, right? You know, and they're only maybe, you know, 20 plus years in, and you're one of like the OGs of the craft brew world. If you're going to build a Mount Rushmore, they'd be chiseled onto it. So when you can take, you know, an industry that has been so well received and embraced and exciting, but doesn't have like the longest history, but you can build some history into what you're doing, I think that is very cool. And Ray was trying to give me sort of that kind of backdrop of St. Petersburg and the Green Benches, which is the namesake of what it is that you're doing. But Chris, if you can, let the listeners know, you know, a little bit about that history, kind of the tradition of the benches and building it into the brewery.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, you know, those names you mentioned are absolute legends in the industry. And, you know, they're people that I look up to. And I think a lot of the breweries that have opened recently do as well. You know, I still drink those beers, and they inspire me daily. St. Petersburg is a fairly new craft beer scene. I mean, we'll be 5 years old this year in a couple of months, and we're actually the first microbrewery St. Petersburg has ever had, which is kind of crazy, especially considering, you know, places like Chicago that have sort of and Boston and New York that have, you know, had a lot more influence on imports than we do. Although we're a heavy import state, the state of Florida itself, it's mostly, you know, things like Corona and you know, really, you know, beachy Mexican style lagers, which have their place and are great stuff as well. But opening something in St. Petersburg was definitely a challenge. The biggest reason was because when Green Bench opened, you weren't allowed to have a brewery in St. Petersburg. We actually had zoning laws that we had to personally change that allowed us to have a brewery in St. Petersburg. It took us about 2 years to change those laws. And once we did, we opened, and now there's, you know, eight or nine breweries in downtown St. Petersburg, which is really special to us.
Wow.
means a lot. The name Greenbench, as you mentioned, is an old St. Petersburg reference. In the early 1900s, around the 1920s, really, at the height of the Greenbench era, that is the St. Petersburg, you know, sort of history. At one point, we had over 3,000 green benches adorning downtown St. Petersburg, and we actually marketed ourselves as the city of the green benches. And it was actually a place where people could gather and do business and talk and communicate. And while we're not trying to bring necessarily the green benches back, we just wanted to bring back the notion that St. Pete's a social town. We have phenomenal weather, and we wanted to show that people could have that same sort of communication and sort of neighborly brotherhood, if you will, around beer this time.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing, and we mentioned those guys, and you definitely have an appreciation of the history of the kind of thing, and it's one thing to get in on sort of the bandwagon. I guess in the area now, there are at least 40 craft breweries, like in the county or something like that, so definitely paving the way and inspiring a lot of people to get on board. But when you had to do it, when it wasn't, it wasn't something that, not even a good idea, when it wasn't even allowed. I mean, that took something. So what is it about, like, your commitment to beer and to craft beer and to the art and what it is that you do that made you think, even against those odds, which would stop, I think, 99% of the people, made you keep going and get it done?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you're right in that it would stop most people, especially considering they legally couldn't do it, you know? Right. So having the struggle of trying to change laws for 2 years, which a credit to Stephen Duffy, who's actually one of the other co-owners of Greenbench. He really spearheaded the change for us. He spent a lot of time downtown trying to talk people into this vision that we had collectively. And it came about as a love for St. Pete more than anything else. You know, we had a love for beer. Getting into beer was easy because beer's cool. Everyone's like, that's an easy thing to get into. What we fell in love with was the community of brewers, the amount of people that from all walks of life who shared a deep passion for something collective and cared about sharing that with people. And St. Petersburg was that way anyway, maybe not around beer, but St. Pete's a very art-forward town, a very open, progressive town that tries to share what we make with everyone that we can, with each other, with tourists, anyone that will take the time to sit down for a moment. So beer goes really hand in hand with St. Petersburg culture, we felt. And so it came about with our love for that community that we had. We all grew up in St. Petersburg. My two business partners, Nathan and Stephen, were actually born in St. Pete. I wasn't born in St. Pete, but I've been there since I was 9.
Wow.
And we loved our community. We loved beer. And we thought, why, especially traveling, you know, going to a phenomenal town. I'm in Detroit, actually, right now. I'm actually at Jolly Pumpkin's Brew Pub as we speak. And which I'm a huge fan of these guys. They've been a huge inspiration for me. But towns like this have tons of breweries, and it's such a great community gathering. And we just wondered, you know, why can't St. Pete have that? And further, why can't St. Pete have the best of that?
Yeah.
And so our passion for beer really is only fueled by our passion and our love for our city.
Well, you mentioned some of the beers that had a place there and people enjoy in the area. You mentioned some of those kind of, you know, kind of inspirational figures in. And of course, you mentioned your passion and love for beer in general. So influence wise, what is it when you have people and you've got this place in the community? But as far as like the style of beers, and I think here's one of the things I think that's unique about people that love craft beer too, is that they don't just love it. It isn't just like, hey, I'm a Bud man and that's just what I'm going to have. And if it's not broke, don't fix it. Is people love to explore and experience all different kinds of things. But for you, when you thought about, here's the beers and the ciders too, right, that are going to be the physical embodiment of Greenbench, what are your influences?
Well, that's a good question, because I think about that a lot. So the reason that we decided on the types of beers we brew, it really, like you said, it really came down to like our passion for our community. And one of the things that we saw happening, you know, people were trying a bunch of new things. Like, we have a bunch of murals in town in St. Petersburg. You can kind of walk through St. Pete and see these phenomenal murals that are really challenging. And that's an important aspect of our town, is to challenge each other and to challenge our local, residents. For us, it would be the local consumer. And so the styles of beer that we produce, while we wanted to not only challenge ourselves, we wanted to challenge the community to try something new that potentially they've never heard of before. They couldn't even pronounce some of the things that we were making. And why that was important was because again, we loved our town, and we felt that the best way that we could help this town is to highlight this town. And we felt that the best way to highlight this town was to force people outside of Florida even, and maybe even outside of the country, to look at St. Petersburg and say, man, something really interesting is happening down there. I need to go visit. So we made a commitment very early on to produce things that were outside of the norm. You know, you mentioned being a, you know, having a Bud Light because you're a Bud Light guy. That's I'm happy you said that, because I try to describe this as often as I can. It's kind of a phenomenon in consumables. You know, when you think of like food, nobody is like pick a burger place guy. You know, like they're not like no one eats one kind of burger right. only every single day, and that's it. They're constantly interested in trying something new. And the problem with beer at the time, 5 years ago, and definitely 30, 40 years ago, was that everyone was stuck in norm when it came to beer. Beer was beer. You'd walk up to a bar and you'd say, give me a beer. You right. wouldn't say, give me a style, give me a brewery. And it was important for us to show the city and then further the world that there was so much more to offer. And ultimately, again, going back to how much we loved our city, we always wondered and we asked ourselves, you know, we travel and we go to these places where people were engaged in the products that they consumed, that we said, why doesn't our city have that? And further, why doesn't our city have the best of that? Because we love the city so much, and otherwise we think it has the best of really living.
You know, here's the thing, too, is the beer side of things, I think, has a unique element as far as that, you know, wanting to get out there and experience. And then also, too, is almost like the celebrity nature of not only the places, but the people that are doing it, and even the different beers. And people here, you know, they'll make the pilgrimage to Three Floyds or to Bell's or to Founders or whatever, you know, that are within the area around the Chicagoland, but not close. I mean, they're definitely making a time and distance commitment to do it. And here you are in Detroit as well. And so let's talk a little bit about the location, too. When you're going to make a destination, you're going to make a place that people are going to take a pilgrimage to. I think that you have done another thing as well. Not only do you have, you know, the beers that people love, and also the name and the history and a lot of that passion, the backstory is awesome. But the location, Ray took me by it. Like, the place is very, very cool. That was well thought out as well.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we, you know, there was a lot of thought involved. But to be honest with you, I feel like we really lucked out, man. I mean, going back in time a little bit, 5 years ago today, we were almost about to open. So we were just finishing construction on the project, and there wasn't much around us. I mean, just a month before we opened this phenomenal Cuban shop across the street called Bodega. And other than that, there weren't any really restaurants or bars on that same strip. As a matter of fact, a lot of people in town were like, you're crazy. The location that you have, no one there, no one goes there. And I guess to even go back a little bit further, when I was in high school, which, you know, I mean, I'll go ahead and say it wasn't that long ago, was you never went downtown. Downtown was boarded up. There was no downtown scene in St. Petersburg when I grew up. And so while downtown started to flourish a little bit deeper into downtown, closer to the Bayside, which is, you know, downtown St. Petersburg, for those not familiar, is literally on the bay. You could see Tampa from the water. So as you creep west away from downtown, and we're technically still in downtown. We're in a district called the Edge District because we are literally on the edge of downtown, which is two blocks from Tropicana Field where the Tampa Bay Rays play. There was nothing down there. And so we definitely gambled a little bit on the space, but we didn't think it was as much of a gamble because, A, the space was historic and we thought beautiful and we had this vision for it. And B, we envisioned St. Petersburg growing out towards the edge, leaving downtown a little bit, not completely, but growing outside of the core and encompassing a greater area. And so in hindsight, it definitely looks like maybe we were geniuses, but at the time, it was a little bit of a gamble, and it provided us a space to really, I guess, stretch our legs a little bit and sort of flex our brewing muscles with a little bit more space than the core of downtown had. So it's become a destination. And I will say that, yeah, right after we opened, that place blew up, man. There's restaurants next to us that are incredible, directly across the street, cocktail bars and, you know, cool farmers markets and apartment buildings and condos coming up all over us, which is great now. But at the time, it was a little bit more of a struggle.
It's hard to really kind of put it all into words, but those are exciting times, right? Because, you know, you're there, you got a kind of a belief and a feeling into what things, you know, can be and kind of the direction that they're moving in. And then I got a chance to get down there and you see this energy, right? And then you see the construction that follows that and you know what it can be. And then the buzz is out there, you know, on the food scene, certainly the beer scene. So to be a part of not only something that is kind of greater than the sum of the parts and really bright, but to be one of the driving forces of the reason that it happened in the first place is really, really cool. So before we let you go, give information on how people can experience some of the things, certainly get down to St. Petersburg, see you all in person. But as far as a website, do you ship any of the beers and how can people keep up with your adventures?
Sure. I mean, the best place would be obviously we have a website, greenbenchbrewingcompany.com. We actually have a new website launching, hopefully, I think September 1st is our target date currently. We're going through an expansion right now, which will allow us to produce a lot more products. In Florida, for sure, we have a lot of beer, specifically in Tampa Bay. But we also ship a lot to Atlanta, North Carolina, and South Carolina as well. And this expansion is going to allow us to supply those markets a little bit greater. We're also a part of the Shelton portfolio, which is the largest importer in the country for beer. And they're pretty select about the breweries that they have in the country. Jolly Pumpkin, where I'm at right now, is actually one of the fathers, if you will, of the portfolio of Shelton Brothers, and they have a network throughout the country. So a lot of our products can be found throughout the country in sort of small volume. Wow. But if you really want to, you know, keep in touch with what we're doing, I would say check our Facebook and our Instagram for the most part, and Twitter. So look for @GreenBenchBrew on Twitter. Look us up at @GreenBenchBrewing on Instagram and on Facebook.
Chris Johnson, he's one of the owners, one of the partners, the head brewer there, Green Bench Brewing, kind of putting, I don't want to say it, you know, but helping to put St. Petersburg on the map and kind of redefine what it is and what it can be for at least food and beer lovers from around the country, around the world. So, Chris, thanks so much for what you're doing. Really mean it. I know Ray is lobbying to have his face be really big on the side of that collaborative beer that you guys are doing. And so before we let you go, what's that going to be? Because Ray's super excited. I got a chance to check out the restaurant. That place is going to be awesome, and you guys will be front and center on the brew side there.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. So Ray's about to open up, you know, maybe a block from our brewery.
Yeah,
right across the street from the Ray Stadium, Tropicana Field. That space has been sort of open for a while, as a lot of the spaces used to be. As we mentioned, that area is really kind of blowing up. But we just brewed a collaboration with him. It's called Dr. Barbecue's Pale Lager. It's a traditional Munich-style Helles. It's extremely refreshing, thirst-quenching, German-style lager. Very traditionally brewed, only about 5% alcohol. And I'll tell you what, in the tasting room, we're moving through it. So we're excited for him to open up, and we can have it on tap at Dr. Barbecue's right across the street.
Well, we love what you're doing. Encourage people. We're going to have a link up at WGNradio.com. Green Bench Brewing down there, St. Petersburg. Chris Johnson, thanks again, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.